Joining me now in the studio is Representative Peter DeFazio. And, sir, it's good to have you back in the studio.
Well, good afternoon. Beautiful day here at the coast.
Yeah. Now, you just finished a town hall here in Florence. Mm-hmm. What was the basis of the discussion that you guys were talking about?
Well, that one was specifically oriented toward health care. You know, since the president has ordered the Justice Department to file in court for a complete repeal of the Affordable Care Act, I'm going to do a series of town halls in my district to remind people. I mean, yeah, not a perfect law, but here's what it did. And here's what had happened if it was repealed. Here in my district alone, Southwest Oregon, there's 150,000 people on expanded Medicaid. Some of them are seniors who are lower income, and others are other people who are lower income. Because Oregon's done a great job, their insurance would be immediately at risk. For others, other than seniors, you'd be back to a point where the insurance company could refuse to cover you if you had a pre-existing condition or charge you a lot more for your policy. All the young adults between 19 and 26 are in their parents' policy would lose that coverage. We go back to the good old days when the insurance companies did something called rescission, where if you got sick, they would either refuse to renew your policy, and in some cases, they would try and take away your health care coverage.
Almost like they did in auto insurance, where if you get a couple wrecks,
yep.
you get kicked off.
Yeah. So all those protections would be gone. So I'm trying to alert people to this as a very real threat, and a number of my colleagues are doing the same thing around the country, and we hope to start a real grassroots movement to push back. Don't repeal the Affordable Care Act. Fix it. Improve it.
How – because that was kind of my next question is I guess there's a sense that, it like you said, it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. A lot of us are paying a lot more than we were,
mm-hmm.
Yet it does cover some of those pre-existing conditions, does cover some of those folks. How do you save those folks and their insurance coverage and then make it more affordable for us? I mean, for me, at 58 years old, almost $1,000 a month is kind of right. Outrageous for me because I hadn't been sick a day in the last 40 years. So,
right.
I'm thinking, now, wow, this is really painful.
Yeah. No. The original bill in the House had a national not-for-profit plan, and it had national exchanges. So instead of being in a group in Oregon that has 10,000 people in it, you would have been in a national group with 1 million people in it, which would dramatically spread the risk, lower premiums, and the not-for-profit plan obviously would further probably offer an option that would be even less expensive. We had the hospital administrator at the town hall, and he said that 30% of the cost of the hospital is trying to administer all the different health care plans that are out there, all the paperwork they have mm-hmm. to do. Just think if we weren't wasting that money on paperwork, but instead using it to provide better health care and lower premiums for people. So, I think we can improve the Affordable Care Act. I've introduced a bill, in fact, to set up a national not-for-profit exchange.
That would definitely be a lot more helpful than what we're seeing now. And again, the Affordable Care Act came at a time when everybody wanted some sort of health care program. It seems like the Republicans really didn't come up with a feasible plan at the time. The Democrats really pushed that forward. So is there any kind of sense of some bipartisan work here, or is it still them against them, so to speak?
Well, I think you find more Republicans. I mean, they spent when they controlled the House and the White House and the Senate. They had multiple votes in the House to repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it with a plan that would have not carried the same benefits, and it wouldn't have saved costs. Sort of. So they've dropped that, and right now, as the president said, well. Yeah, we're going to repeal it, and we'll replace it with something better, and I'll tell you what that is after the election.
Yeah.
And, I say to people, I remember, we had a guy when I was young, ran for president, named Richard Nixon. And he had a secret plan to end the war in Vietnam when he was running for president. And he got elected, and it turned out he didn't have a plan to end the war. And I'm not I wouldn't want to bet my health care on someone who says, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do to your health care after I get reelected.
Well, bombing Hanoi was probably not part of his secret plan, but that obviously didn't work as well either. Well, because I understand, you know, talking with you and talking with other folks, there are a lot of sensible people in Congress, but there is a much broader belief that everybody's crazy in Congress and the Senate and in the White House, and we need to go back to where we all got along. How do we get bipartisanship back again? I mean, it's definitely a different climate than it was many years ago.
Well, in the House, we have something called gerrymandering, which is every 10 years after we do the census, we draw
new districts.
U.S. House districts, and the states redraw their state Senate and representative lines. I'm on a bill that would say that those lines would be drawn by a nonpartisan commission. So that you wouldn't have the gerrymandering, and that would dramatically improve things in the House. I have a swing district. My district could be Republican, could be Democrat. Trump only lost by 554 votes. A lot of people come from districts where, you know, they could die and still get reelected because, you know, they've been so gerrymandered, whether to the right for the Republicans or to the left for the Democrats. And that's not healthy for either party, because then you don't find people coming together in the middle. I mean, used to be a conservative Democrat was way more conservative than a liberal Republican. But now we're at the point where, you know, even a conservative Democrat doesn't, is nowhere near some of the more moderate Republicans, because they've lost most of their moderates, again, because of gerrymandering.
Well, I think we talked about this before, but Heath Shuler, when he was in Congress, they redistrict his district.
Right.
And then he said he's not going to run again. Then we end up with Mark Meadows, who now we can't get rid of, you know. And it's like, so, you know, it really worked against the people, at least in Western North Carolina.
Oh, I mean, across the country.
Yeah.
I mean, Pennsylvania, the courts redrew, they threw out the maps in Pennsylvania, and the courts redrew the lines on what they considered to be a nonpartisan basis. And the Democrats picked up five seats because, you know, there are states where I think Wisconsin or Minnesota, where the Republicans are getting 51% of the vote, but they control 65% of the seats in the legislature because of gerrymandering. I mean, that's got to end. I mean, it really does.
Are you involved at all in, or I know you're aware of, but are you involved at all at the idea of states wanting to change how they view the Electoral College? I know that Oregon's recently voted on changing the votes to go to the winner of the popular vote for that. Is that something you're not really involved in?
I don't think the legislature has done that yet.
They didn't? I thought they said they voted on that the other day. Maybe.
Oh, well, maybe. I might have missed it.
Okay.
But it was proposed in the last legislature, and Peter Courtney blocked it. Maybe maybe it's moving in this one. It's called the Popular Vote Compact or something like that. I support the idea. I think the president should be elected on a popular vote. There's been, ever since, you know, I was in college and you studied political science, they said, well, you know, if you did that, the president, you know, candidates would never visit small states. Well, no, you would have to go anyway. You might even go to Alaska, because you might win by 10 votes and maybe you get those 10 votes in Alaska. I think absolutely the opposite is true. And having a president who's elected by a minority of the people in the country does not it doesn't sit well with a lot of folks.
Right. Yeah, I know. People say that, well, Portland would elect the next president. L.A. would elect the next president. New York City would elect the next president. And Salem and Eugene and all those folks pretty much would be out as far as the total number of votes that are collected in there. The possibility, I should say, of that.
Well, but I mean, look at the way it works now. Wyoming has fewer people than live in my congressional district. Yet they have two senators and a representative. So they get three electoral votes for 500,000 or 450,000 people in Wyoming.
True, yeah.
And in my district, which has 780,000 people in it, they get, you know, they get one and, you know, like there's two senators who are statewide, so they get 1.4 electoral votes in my district, and they have almost double the population of Wyoming, who gets 3 electoral votes. So yeah. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. But the other thing that's problematic is the Senate, being fixed the way it is state by state. I mean, when you have two people who represent 500,000 people in the Senate, and then you have two people in California who represent, 40 million people, it's, there's a real question of equity there, I think.
What are some of the other things happening in Congress now that people might not be aware of, things that are important for us to be paying attention to?
Well, I got to chair the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee. I've got a number of bills I want to move forward. I mean, the president has promised repeatedly to put massive investment in infrastructure. I'm trying to work with the White House and talk about real funding for infrastructure. Out of my committee, I'm going to move a bill to reauthorize the state revolving fund for wastewater. It used to be the federal government would pay half or more of the cost of someone's wastewater system because those are federal mandates for clean water. That program hasn't been reauthorized since 1987. I'm going to move that. I'm going to move my bill again to use the harbor maintenance tax to maintain our harbors. I got that out of committee twice, and Paul Ryan wouldn't allow it to be voted on the floor. So he's gone, and I'm pretty sure I can move that bill and get my leadership to agree so we can begin to, get caught up with our dredging and jetty needs here on the coast and all around the country.
Yeah, I know the port now is talking about doing that here, and the cost of it is just so expansive that it's almost hard to get done.
Right, but we are collecting a tax. Congress, back in the Reagan era, put in place a tax on the value of imported goods. It's a very tiny tax, but it's essentially a hidden sales tax or 0.017% or something like that. And it brings in almost $2 billion a year, but Congress has been, and it's dedicated to harbors. And Congress has been underspending that to the point where there's $10 billion that hasn't been spent, unobligated. So I intend to move that bill. And then, the biggest one is the surface transportation bill. We've got 47,000 bridges in America that are basically at the near the point of failure. They're in disrepair. Some of them are weight limited. A lot of them are weight limited. And we've got another 230,000 bridges that need work, but that 47,000 need to be replaced. You've got the national highway system, 40% of the roads deteriorated to the point where you can't just put asphalt on top of it. You got to rebuild the road. And then obviously,
saw Highway 101 down south of us here.
I met with ODOT yesterday, Oregon Department of Transportation. They gave me a presentation on that. The feds are going to pay for that fix because it's an emergency. It was a statewide emergency, and it's an emergency repair. So we will get that money out of the Highway Emergency Fund. A permanent fix would be just phenomenally expensive. So they say, it's better to, it only happens once every 15 years. We'll just keep fixing it because the alternate route would cost $400 million. Hmm. And I don't think we're going to be able to come. I'm chair of the committee, but I don't think I get $400 million for that.
What about wildfire preparation and stuff? Is there money and supplies or resources for that?
We're finally this year going to the way it's worked is every year that there's money in the Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service budget. It's never adequate for the fires, particularly as the fires become larger and more intense. So then when the Forest Service runs out of money, they have to rob money from other accounts to keep fighting the fires. And often that money comes out of fire prevention, that is forest health, fuel thinning. Mm-hmm. And fuel reduction and things like that. This year, they're not going to have to do that. It's going to be after they exhaust their budget, the money is going to come from the general fund of the government. I tried to say it should come out of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Somehow we have the Federal Emergency Management Agency pay if you have a tornado, if you have a flood, a hurricane, an earthquake, you get massive amounts of aid from Federal Emergency Management Agency. We should be treating fires the same way.
Well, hopefully we won't need the money.
This year is looking pretty good at the moment. I don't want to,
We've had a decent amount of rain, too.
Yeah.
We had a lot of burn last year, so, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this year we're in way better shape in terms of snowpack, and I would imagine the moisture levels are going to be way up.
All right. Anything else that you want to touch on before you go?
No, that's good. No?
Well, cool. Sure. Thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it, and you know, keep doing what you're doing there. Keep them to the fire, you know, because we want to make sure that Oregon's remembered when it comes time for, you know, money things.
Well, I intend to bring back congressionally designated spending to make needed improvements here in Oregon.
Senator DeFazio, Representative DeFazio, yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And coming up next, last but not least, Bettina Hannigan with the Florence Chamber is going to talk Roadie Days right after this.